just washed our hands without saying a bracha. Now we're going to eat the carpets. So as we mentioned, in Russia, green vegetables don't grow too often at this time of year.
True? Yeah.
So what they would serve in Lubavitch for carpets was either onion or potato. Now, you can serve other stuff. We still stick with the onions and potatoes, more or less just because that's what we did in Lubavitch. But the idea of a karpas, as my grandfather would explain, it's Pesach is called the holiday of spring, Chag Raviv. And this idea of spring, it's a very significant theme. It's a beautiful letter from the Rebbe. It's 25 years ago, I forget exactly which exact year. But it says, spring is a time where you see new life everywhere. In the plant kingdom, the animal kingdom, and everybody is like, instantly like, hey, after a cold winter, it's becoming alive again. And that's Pesach for the Jewish people as a whole. I mean, in the story of history of the Jewish people, they had a long winter of being in Egypt, no life, no vitality. And then Pesach was springing into new life. And similarly, for each person, his own individual avoda, Pesach is that time of coming forth with new energy, new vitality. It's just a good way of, like, hey, we live again on a higher level, no matter which level you are as you come into Pesach. That idea of, hey, like, a little bit more energy, a little more vitality, that's the way it should be. So that's, now we dip the karpas in salt water. What salt water reminds us of two things. First of all, the tears the Jews shed in Egypt over the slavery, the oppression, remembers the tears. It's also a reminder of the splitting of the Red Sea. The Red Sea salt. It's the salt sea, it's not fresh water, it's the salt water sea. So it's a reminder of the splitting of the sea.
That's how we dip in the salt water?
That in the tears of the oppression. When we make the bracha, the karpas, we should also have the intent that the Bora Priya Dhamma refers to the morah as well. In other words, the morah, even though it's eaten as part of the meal, since it's taken out of the meal per se, you're not eating it together with bread, you're eating it in the main course of the meal, rather its own separate thing. There's reason to say that it requires a bracha bar priya dhamma, but there's reason to say that it doesn't because you've already said a motzi. So the easiest thing to do is when you say the bracha bar priya dhamma here for the karpas, you should also have in mind that you're taking care of the morah. Okay, yachatz. Yachatz, you split the middle matzah. In general, the matzahs they're called Kohen Levi Yisrael. Which, if you take that, go Kohen Levi Yisrael, you have Kli. And if you go Yisrael Levi Kohen, you have Yelech. Both of the Kli means a receptacle. That the whole idea of matzah is to make you a Kli, a receptacle, for God's bracha. And Yelech means to proceed, to go forward, that the whole idea of matzah is supposed to give you a stimulus, energy, to go forward. Now, of Now, when you break the middle marks of the mark of Levi, because the tribe of Levi was divided into Levites and Kohanim.
Is it a board of ruts and shoves?
You can definitely put it there. Okay. Now, it says up in Kabbalah that you should and then the Kabbalah makes it further that you should break the middle matzah and take the larger half. Again, for those people who I've said that and I have met people in the larger half, the larger piece. You take the larger piece. you guys are a little bit slow on the
long day. Long day.
Anyway, you take the larger piece and for the apikomen. Now you break that piece into five, and the Rebbeim actually they broke into six. They would put away one of the small pieces, so they have five pieces. That's the Kabbalistic, it's the five vurot. So,
five what?
Five vurot.
Vurot?
Vurot. When you're a Kabbalist, you know. If I was really important, I'd tell you, but it's not.
I just wonder what the lame man thinks of this, I can pass along to somebody.
Just tell him vurot. Okay.
What's the refine?
What? Yeah. Okay. Got it. Okay. So, would you? So, once it was, if I'm not mistaken, the Rebbe Rashab. Story.
How do you do a clean break of those matzahs? Last year, that was like my biggest problem to say that. Like,
not a bad idea. So the Rebbe Rashab, when he was a little boy, was sitting on his grandfather's side, his Masechet side, and since he says take the larger half, one of the guests was like measuring to see which is exactly larger. And the Masechet looked at him and says, if something it has to be measured, see if it's bigger, then it's not really bigger. Yeah. And he says that Rebbe Rashab heard that, but made a very big impression. Godless, greatness, it's got to be distinct. And there's no sense to it, but there's not a comparison, a little bit higher, no. It's got to be of a totally different and a higher level entirely. Okay, stealing matzah. As you know, many of us grew up stealing the matzahs. My grandfather used to pay his afikomen. But the Lubavitch, we don't follow that custom. You break them in half. You put the smaller portion back. The piece, the larger portion, the larger half, you break into five. Huh? They didn't. What?
No. It actually only happened that they had six. They put away the.
If it broke into six, then they would put aside the sixth piece. Not they purposely broke into six. If they would break into six, it's a by accident. Like I said, you don't always get a clean break. It's not so easy. So we don't steal matzah, because whatever a child does has an effect on his character. We want our people to be honest, and so therefore, stealing, even as part of a mitzvah, or even worse, making stealing a mitzvah.
Where did it come from?
There's a lashon in the Gemara, chotzim at the matzahs. Now that's the lashon in the Gemara. Rashi and others interpret Kotanis and Matzis to mean eat the Matzis quickly. You shouldn't drag out eating the Matzis.
Eat the Matzis?
Quickly.
Is that why we have like a 2-minute limit or something?
We'll get there. Let's not go fast. But there's also a thing that Gemara elaborates on at length, that a lot of effort should be put into Seder to make it interesting for children, even to the point of playing games and, you know, doing things in just a perfect curiosity. And so Rambam actually translated speaks about Kotzim and Samatzis, is that we steal the matzah.
Rambam makes it.
Yeah. It doesn't say we steal the Afikoman matzah. Just in general, you grab matzahs. The Afikoman game particularly doesn't mention. But he says that this is one of the things done to keep grabbing matzah is done to keep children's curiosity. So apparently, you know, exactly when the custom started, I don't know, but it's a long-standing one.
Yeah, everyone does it.
What? Yeah, it's done.
Or Afikoman was a hot dog bun. We stole it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me get to Magid. Magid means talk. And here is one of my favorite sifas. We start the Magid with Kol Lachma Anya. This is the bread of affliction. So that the ask in the sifa, he says, why do we say this is the bread? And sometimes it looks like it was baked 2,000 years ago, but it's probably not more than 6 months old. It may be 6 months old though. But it's, you know, so why don't say this is good bread? So the Rebbe explains there that you can ask several other questions, because here we're saying it's part of Magi. And yet the whole idea of Magid is to be question and answer. We're going to speak about with Manastama. You have to first ask questions and then answer. That's again part of the idea of keeping people's interest, that, you know, if somebody gives a drasha and keeps talking and talking, that's why, you know, I get people falling asleep. It's much better if people ask or about. So Haggadah has to be question and answer. So that starts Magid. But wait, you said Magid here, and right after Magid you have Olach Ma'anya. It's part of Magid, so why is it a question? Why is it after the four questions? So that explains that what it's saying is a very important thing. This is the bread. A person is putting himself into a situation where today I'm leaving Egypt. This is a present tense experience. In other words, we're talking not about something which happened 3,000 odd years ago. We're talking about something that's happened tonight. This is the bread we're leaving Egypt. This is the way a person has to look at the Seder. In other words, before we start Magid, we have to set the mood, set the tone. And setting the tone is by saying, hey, we're living this. This isn't the story of the past. Now, on that basis, he goes further. He says, Kol dichvin yetze v'yecho. All who are hungry, come and eat. My grandfather always said, now we say, all hungry, come and eat. What happens? The doors are closed. When we open the doors? After the meal. Yeah, after the meal. Yeah. we're serious about the invitation. But anyway. The Rebbe brings it out here, he says, all who are hungry. Everybody likes stuff, yes. But who's going to invite everyone? only a person who's leaving Egypt, who's going out of his boundaries. As long as you're in Egypt, Egypt is, as we, you know, can we say, you say your limits, your boundaries, limitations. As long as you're in Egypt, you'll invite your friends. You won't invite all who are hungry, all who are needy. You have your limitations. When can you say all who are hungry come in? When you go today, I'm going out of Egypt. This is my personal experience. And that's the same thing. Even though we're here, I'm already putting myself in a situation of Eretz Yisrael. I'm already putting myself in a situation of B'nai Chorim. As the Baal Shem Tov would say, where a person's mind is, that's where he is. The conception is, I'm a free man, and I'm Eretz Yisrael. Just the thing you know. You say, I forget which poster that it was. This is, what do you say in Jerusalem? You say, Ashtahachu, here we are, next year in Eretz Yisrael. Wait, we are in Eretz Yisrael. No. Eretz Yisrael here means Eretz Yisrael of the Gula, not just playing the physical land of Israel. The whole point is that we're talking about not physical Eretz Yisrael, but spiritual Eretz Yisrael. Now we get to Manishtana. Now, we all ask, Manishtana of course is the kids' thing, the kids ask questions. But it's not only for the kids. I mean, my Shver has used to have 20 odd people at the Seder. He'd go around and everybody ask the questions individually. But, you know, we just, in my house, we just do it all together. Takes time. My friend is like, you ask. Because the truth is, on one hand, you're asking, it's the child asking his father. That's why in Yiddish, you start off by saying, Tatis with the Fregen, Yisemosetic would say, Zaviat with the Fregen, because he would ask by the Alter Rebbe, his grandfather. And you're asking, because, by the other hand, the simple question is, the simple point is that, no, every Jew is asking his father in heaven, this is a child-son relationship of the highest level, each Jew asking God. It's not even asking also, that's also a nice expression. Manishtana Laila Zeh is a statement, not a question. Wow, how different this night is. In other words, it's not only a question of why is this night different? It's a statement. Wow, this is a totally different night. A person looks at the spiritual reality and says, hey, this isn't like all other nights. Something is extremely different.
How do you see that in the word manish?
Manishtana. How different is this night? In other words, instead of how is this night different, how different is this night? It works. As soon as I can tell you, it's 100% fine.
And versus the order to the questions is different.
Yeah, that was just what I was going to get to right now. The typical Haggadahs, both Sephardic and most Ashkenazic, start with matzah. The first question is matzah. And Moror, Matbilin, and then Mesugin. That order is pretty straight. Matzah is a mitzvah d'oraisa. Moror, in the present day, is a mitzvah d'rabbanan, because there's the Moror of the. It says you should eat the korban pesach, a matzah Mororim t'tafeil. Eat the paschal sacrifice with matzah and bitter herbs. There's no mitzvah to eat bitter herbs by themselves. Rabbanan made a mitzvah to eat bitter herbs. So matzah is a mitzvah to Yeraisa, Mor is a mitzvah to Rabbanan. Matbilin is a custom. And Mesubim is the last question added after the time the time when the basic mitzvah was destroyed, they add the question of the subim. That's their order.
Subim is leaving.
What?
Subim
is leaving.
Excuse me. After the gula, we were supposed to be like kings.
Well, we're supposed to be like kings. The subim is in general for Pesach, but we're supposed to be like kings. But the point is that at the time of the Beis HaMikdash, the fourth question was why do we eat cooked meat? It's in the Mishnah Pesachim. Why the whole year we eat meat either cooked or roasted, and this night we only eat it roasted. We don't ask that question, so we don't eat the Korban Pesach. So that they added. They took out that question and added the question of misubim, of reclining. So that's the order of, in general, the Lubavitch. The order is first matfilim, first dipping, then matzah, mora, and misubim. Now, curiously, by the way, even though this is only followed by Lubavitch and some other Haggadahs, it happens to be the order which both all three of Rambam, Rif, and Rosh, the three leading poskim, say that it should follow this order. So it's just strange that nobody ever did it that way. So halachically, and the reason why is the first mitzvah we do at night is matzah, then matzah, then moro. That's to say, and again, misubim is last because the question added. That's the child asks according to what he sees. First thing he sees is matzah. Second thing he sees is matzah. Third thing he sees is matzah. No, so misubim is actually the last question. It's an added on question.
Why would it move to the top?
The Sudan is always and the end because it was exchanged. The order of the first three is what we're worried about. Mm-hmm. Of the first three, the first thing the child sees is Matbili. But the other goes into a much deeper point here. This is like, Matzah is deraisa. More is the Rabbanim. These are big things. Matbilim is a minhag. Custom. So there's two different sikhas. First is regarding education. There are a lot of people who put a big emphasis on the big stuff. Child got to know what's important, valuable, real. And then, this is not so important, but it's pretty important. And the little things are kind of what will find their own place. When a child is educated in such a way, they'll be sloppy about the little stuff. And to a certain extent, even the big things aren't going to make such a powerful impression upon him because, well, of course, my parents said that they're big. But if I don't think they're big, then I don't think they're big. When he sees careful emphasis on precise detail, little customs, little points here, little points there, oh, my parents are in touch with a higher authority. It's not just feel this is a big thing. They're following a law which requires them to do this and this. Oh, they're not the masters. And therefore they're careful of this thing. So of course they're careful of the big things also. But it's the idea of attention to detail gives you a whole different conception of who's your master. It's not I'm the master. The master. Of course, when I say, oh, the big stuff, that comes first, that means I understand it's big. And therefore, and therefore I keep it. When you see precise, careful attention to custom, things that are little, but oh, it's part of Torah. I'm careful about it. It makes a very powerful impression on a child. That's one point. That's a sikha in the Kutti Sikhas. Then there's a sikha, the Rebbe said this sikha before he became Rebbe. It's also in Yeshimas, it's found somewhere. He says words like this. In a husband-wife relationship, there's things that are said. Hey, I like it this way. And like, if a husband or a wife tells each other, I like it this way, they're like, you do it. You know, hey, he or she said that. Yeah, you do it. Then there's stuff which, well, it's not said, but it's, you know, implied so obviously that you pick up on it without too much effort. Well, yeah, there are people like those. Those marriages don't last too long.
Why wouldn't that person just tell the other person?
Well, it's part of like relating to the person on a deeper level that, oh, you're of one mind, so you don't have to say everything. And then there's stuff, well, it's not said, and it's not even like openly implied. But if you're really in tune with the other person, you know what they like, you know what they want. So the Rebbe says, the Araisa is stuff which is said explicitly. God tells your people, this is the way it is. You don't got too much choice in the matter, do you?
Then they tell you to be irrational.
You're doing what God wants. Don't got too much choice in the matter. He said. Then there's Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral law, Mitzvos Rabbanan. He didn't say it, but the allusions were there, obviously. So if you're any kind of attuned to him, you pick it up. Then there's another level. He didn't say it. There's no obvious allusions. But if you're really in touch with the other person, you know what they want. And those are minhagim, those are the customs. It's a real deep relationship. And that's what we're putting on. It's so simple. If you look in the Kutti Torah, the Alter Rebbe says that same idea and Simchas Torah, says the corpus of Simchas Torah, Luv and Esro is a mitzvah. Yisuf Hamayim, the water libation, is Torah Shebaal Peh. Simchas Torah is a custom. So Luv and Esro is one level. Simple special shrev is even a higher level, and hakafos is the highest level because it's minhag. But this word about the inner sensitivity, it's Rebbe's word. He said it at Fabrengen. There were about 20 people at those Fabrengen. It's like an amazing thing. Previous Rebbe told it at Fabrengen every Shabbos for Brooklyn. Every Fabrengen, 20, 30 people would listen to it. And so Zalman Posner was there at the Brennan, whatever, that had said this word. And I heard it from 50 years afterwards, and it was still like he was wowed by it 50 years later. Powerful. Okay, so So that's the idea. You know, these two dimensions, both in education and in the internal relationship, that's the source for our custom of minhagim for us. Besides the actual halacha dimension.
What is the halacha about bitul there? The first thing is
yes, my view is Russian bitul, but that is not, I haven't heard that from the Bayim. Okay. Avodim v'yinim, we're slaves to Pharaoh in Egypt. That's the answer. You know, it's curious. We ask four questions and we don't answer them. Well, that's, the idea is that's part of the whole process. Child, you ask this question. You want to get the answer? I'm not going to tell it to you. As you go through the whole story of the Agada, you get to you'll understand the answer. Okay, so you start with the slaves. We're slaves to power in Egypt. You will see a Kodesh Baruch Hu, and if God didn't take us out, we would be obligated, we would still be slaves to power in Egypt. Then we say, I feel kolono chachamim, kolono bonim, kolono yodis Torah, mitzvolem l'sat b'tzis Mitzrayim. Even if, so therefore, since the slavery would be a practical, something which we ourselves would have to undergo, we have to celebrate it as a personal experience, and therefore, even if we are all knowledgeable, we're all wise, we all know the Torah, there's a mitzvah for us to relate the story of the Exodus. And the simple thing is, hey, since it could apply to you, thank God for taking you out from there. There's a deeper void here. As we said before, it's supposed to be a present-day experience. If it's just intellectual, you know it already. Why do you have to say it? But the point is, we're all wise, we're all understanding, we all know the Torah. You have to experience it. It's not just relaying the story that happened. You have to experience. And that's the Rebbeim uses the expression, the sapher. They say, the sapher, which means to tell, also means to shine. A sapphire stone is called a shining stone. Have a star sapphire? We should glow with the light of the redemption in Egypt. And therefore, even if you know it, if unless you glow, unless there's a shining experience of redemption in your own life, then you're missing. Then it says, "Call a marvel is happening, Mr. Shem, Reza Meshuba." And therefore, since it's an experiential thing, the more you tell about it, the more you shine the light of Egypt, of the Exodus from Egypt, the better it is. How do we see an expression of this? Ma'aseh b'Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua. We tell the story about five great sages. They all knew. And what happened? They spent the whole night talking over the idea of the Exodus. Here's the word also. Why did it take them the whole night? Because they were great sages. When you're a simple person, how long does it take you to have the Yetzias Mitzrayim, to leave your limitations? Not very much. Your limitations are small. If you're a great sage, do you ever see a thinking person spring into action? It's like hard. He's an intellectual. He moves slow. So, for these great sages to experience the idea of Yetzias Mitzrayim, they had to work at it the whole night.
None of them were descended from slaves.
There
were all Levites, or
there's a different board there. That none of them were the people. And they all showed that none of them were the people who were enslaved. You had Kohanim, Levim, converts, etc. That's the seventh point. They were, and also they were Mesubim B'nai Brak, Bnei Brak also has the lashon a lightning flash is called the Barak. You know, it's the whole idea of their Seder was to reach this flash of the Exodus from Egypt. And he did this nice way. They said the whole night until the students came and told them, Rabbi Seinu, our teachers, the time for Shema has come. So, one of the explanations of this, I said before, the students had small akedim. And they told them, Rebbe's, look, even if you yourselves haven't quite gotten to the idea of Yetzias Mitzrayim, we have. It's morning for us. Shema has come. The time of the morning, the time has come. That's one nice word. It's a nicer word than this. It says the students came. The students weren't there at the Seder of the Rebbeim themselves. They're outside. Now think about it for a second. What happens when you have five great rabbis and their students are all outside? What are the students going to be doing for the most part?
Keeping in the windows.
What? It's not just peeking in the window, but between themselves, what are they going to be saying? My Rebbe is greater than your Rebbe. No, that just like is the nature of like people. They always get into this thing. What do we see here? The students come and say, Rabbi Seinu, our teachers, there's no sense of my Rebbe is greater. It's all our teachers. The Rebbeims hear that, but say, oh, the Giyas Man Krishna Shashat, the light of the morning is coming. People can get to that sense of Achdus, then it's morning late. So, as a continuation of this story, it says, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, I'm like, it's as if I was 70 years old. It's the whole drosh on this from the Rebbe. It starts like this. Was he 70 years old?
No.
He was 18. But what happened? That year, they deposed Rabbi Gamliel as a Nasi, because he was a very strict and forceful person. And for various reasons, they didn't want to pick this one, They picked Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, who was an 18-year-old boy, to replace him. He was a little bit embarrassed. Like, hey, what kind of little beard do you have at 18? You don't look like a... And so, that night, he grew a long beard as a sage, as if he looked like he was 80 years old, as a 70 years old. Now, the reason I have it as a board here. The lesson, Menazaria, he said was a Gilgul, a reincarnation of Shmuel HaNavi. Shmuel HaNavi lived 52 years. His 18 and Shmuel is 52, give you 70. So the Rebbe takes that and says, that shows you that a person can be in touch with the good of his previous lifestyles. And I think it's not just something which happened in the past, but where you were previously, the good of it can affect you as well. My wife also has a nice voice. Also, it's cute. She says it just about every Seder. Before he accepted the job, he says, let me go home and ask my wife. Now, if he was 18, she was probably 16. So, Klal Yisrael, the entire Jewish people, are sitting and waiting that the 16-year-old girl is going to decide their spiritual future. Okay. So he says, it's as if I'm 70 years old, and I didn't merit to understand the idea of saying Yetzias Mitzrayim at night. In other words, Yetzias Mitzrayim, going out of your boundaries during the daytime, when the sun is shining, when God's light is apparent and visible, that I can understand. That a person, if during the night, in the time of oppression, in the time of spiritual darkness, can experience it. It's Mitzrayim. That I never understood. Explain it. And then it said, is the word which the Rebbe said it, in the name of the previous Rebbe. I felt my shvir, I said, there's only going to watch. He says this. Call you, it's a drasha in Gemara style. Gemara says, Mantis, the Pasuk says, Mantis, this was Yom Tetz Mitzrayim, call you Mechayachlan, just remember the day which you left Egypt, all the days of your life. Why didn't say all? Let's just say the days of your life. All is coming to teach you something. So, all could be teaching you the night as well as the days. Or, all could be teaching you even the time of Mashiach. Like, we'll be remembering the Yetzias Mitzrayim even the time of Mashiach. In other words, even though the redemption of Mashiach is going to be something great and transcendent much more than the redemption from Egypt, since redemption from Egypt started, opened the way for all redemptions, it therefore gets a place of importance even in the time of Mashiach. But the board, again, which the other said the name of the previous Rebbe, I said, the Gemara's board, if you read it to this, Yimecha Yecha Olam Hazeh, the days of your life are for this world. Call Yimecha Yecha, all the days of your life should be dedicated for what purpose? L'havi L'mos Mashiach, to bring about Mashiach's coming. It's Call Yimecha Yecha, what are you doing for your whole life? L'havi L'mos Mashiach, to bring Mashiach's coming. Okay, then you start to tell the four sons, short story of the four sons. The Tzvia Ner from Dinov. He was a Hungarian Rebbe, great tzaddik. He had a habit of, before he would do his own Seder, he'd walk through the streets of Dinov to kind of listen in, see how everybody else was doing the Seder. So his Gabbai who came with him when even as they were walking, and they passed one house. As they're going to the four sons, you hear somebody reading Echad Chacham. And they're saying Echad like Echad Krishma. Echad Rosh. And so the Gabbai is just chuckling to himself. Well, it's not the same Echad. He can take the chad of Krishna and bring it down even to the level of the Rasha.